the wizards file one by one toward duels beneath the midday sun. Their rivals chosen, fates entwined, and venue of their clash consigned. They sling their spells and draw their blades and watch for movement through the shades. For from that darkness, deep and dense, comes conjured death to take them hence.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Taz Royale, our winner-take-all Battle Royale season.
Do you know what they call it in France?
What's that?
Do you know what they call it in France?
They call it a Taz with cheese.
I mean, say if you're going to joke on the intro, say it with your fucking chest, man.
Dad already fucking ate it.
And also,
Dad
Travis made that joke. I'm pretty sure Travis made that joke last week.
Also pretty sure someone made that joke 2 weeks before that. So
like, it's cool that we have, it's sort of a running gag, take, inside joke, reference, callback. It's like four layers of joking mechanisms in one, which just makes it funnier and funnier.
Hey, Griffin. Here in about 45 minutes or so, you're going to need me.
Yes.
I'm serious. You're going to need me, and I'm going to let you fucking twist.
Okay.
Just mark it down, okay? I was just trying to be like, bring a fun energy to it, and you wanted to park the car.
The energy was fun.
You wanted to pull over at the Nitro Sitco and give me a spanking.
The energy was fun. It was also, what I liked about it most is it was so familiar. Like, it felt like, oh, this joke is like a
comfy pair of house slippers.
Yeah, it's like, I know this joke. I've burrowed into its bosom before.
Not like this conversation.
Yeah.
Not like this, exchange. It's like, feels like it's a thousand times.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like a thousand.
So it's the morning of your fifth trial.
Boys.
You appear on the lawn of the ziggurat along with the other members of the dwindling pool of 24 aspirants remaining in this conclave. Peering down at you and the other wizards assembled here on the lawn from the ziggurat's higher tiers, you see seven of the members of the octave staring down at you all. And then from behind them, you see pushed through the impeccably dressed octave member known as Coxie, who you met during your last sort of break from all the action. Coxie emerges from the building and hovers well off the ground. The long tails of his coat dangle sort of beneath him. And he says, "Aspirants, I welcome you to your fifth challenge, the Trial of Conjuration. You have all either chosen or been assigned your opponent, and against them you will duel to the death in an arena specifically designated for you. In a moment, your assigned battlefields will be revealed, and you will have 15 minutes to make your way to the arena with your adversary, after which time a barrier will appear around the arena and the fight will begin. And be forewarned. Your opponent is not the only danger that you will be facing during the trial. Arcane forces will be conjured to assail you. I advise you to keep your enemy in your sights at all times, but don't forget to keep these conjured hazards in your periphery, or else you're going to die. And quickly. Once your opponent has fallen, you may return here to claim your prize or spectate your fellow aspirants' duels. You'll be unable to interfere in the outcome of those duels because of the aforementioned barrier, but you may glean some insight into the capabilities of the 11 other survivors who you'll face in the coming trials. Any questions? We don't usually do that, but people always have questions.
Are any holds barred?
Again, Lorovith, I, again, for like the fifth time, man, no, there's no holds will be barred. Go crazy. Okay, no one else? Alrighty then, ring the bell! and a loud chime resonates from within the ziggurat. And from within the building, 24 large glowing spheres of light shoot from the roof of the structure and disperse through the sky. These big glowing spheres of light stop in pairs at set points, hovering a good 20 feet, 30 feet off the ground around the floating island. And then they expand, and you realize that these floating spheres of light are the holographic busts of the 24 remaining wizards, similar to those you've seen inside the ziggurat's foyer depicting the fallen aspirants. Scanning the area, looking around at the different sort of dueling pairs, their holographic visages floating in the sky, you each eventually find your designated arena. Lorevith, you see your glowing holographic face and Gracon's floating over the long bridge connecting the shores of the forest to the lily pad islands floating in the massive sort of northwestern lake of the Ziggurat Isle. Helgrammet, just beyond the two of them, hovering over a stretch of woods by the edge of the island, you see your bust and Dr. Legume's floating in the air. And then all the way on the opposite end of the island, Rictus, you find the image of yourself and the gentleman floating over the graveyard. As these busts appear...
Who is Duber? Who's Duber fighting?
You look around and you can see all of the other kind of like pairings by looking at the holographic busts floating in the sky. You see Duber Sweetleaf's sweet little innocent baby face, and it is floating alongside the face of Pip, a little guy, basically David the Gnome, a big pointed hat, white sort of pointed beard. From what you have seen of Pip, he is... similar frame as Duber's Sweetleaf, you get the sense that this pairing is about as fair a shot as Sweet Duber's going to get.
I should have asked this back there, but are we allowed to interfere with other contestants, or do we all have to stay in our own lanes?
There will be a barrier constructed around the arenas once the battle begins that will not go down until your opponent falls.
Okay.
Anyone want to do anything in the 15 minutes you have to get to your arenas?
Do I see the gentleman?
Yes. I mean, everybody is gathered sort of all together on the lawn of the ziggurat. So you see him looking pretty resolute. He's not going to stop really to chatter with his buds in the crowd if he has any left. He's you see him turn and start to walk towards the eastern edge of the island toward the graveyard.
I want to run up beside him, do a little walk and talk.
Okay. Oh, yes, hello, Rictus. How did you sleep last night? I hope this day finds you rested and that our contest is glorious and satisfying.
I slept like the grave. I should also mention, gone are Rictus's, like, neon kind of goth clothes, and in, like, full, like, black suit. And, like, black half-cloak.
Tactical camo gear? Or is this, like...
No, traditional Ravenwood finery.
Okay. That's amazing. Wow, it seems like you've dressed for the occasion. Is it you're just trying to sort of get on my level from a sort of sartorial standpoint? Or is this some sort of ceremonial rite that I don't understand?
No, I more just wanted to show that I'm taking it seriously. And I've had just a question stuck in my brain since we spoke yesterday.
Yes, what is it?
Why are you here? You talked about, like, that I wasn't going to distract you from, like, what you were doing, and is it just that you want to achieve the power of the octave, or is there a greater purpose? Why are you here?
I recognize that when I speak about myself, it makes me seem unrelatable. And that is something I've lived with my entire life. So believe me when I say that I am the most powerful man inside of the fold. That is not meant to be a braggadocious sort of quip. It is simply an observation. With my power, I have been able to achieve a life that no other living being within the fold has ever accomplished. But I am just a fatted, shiny goldfish floating in a very small bowl. And if I am to hop outside the confines of this bowl and grow legs and walk, the metaphor's gotten way away from me, but this is my way out, and I intend to take it. Does that make me seem crass?
It's such a relief, honestly. Because I was so worried that you were going to have like a selfless, like, oh, I've got a sick sister, and the only way I'll be able to help her is if I do. Ah, such a relief. Thank you so much.
Yes. I need to warn you about something. On the off chance that I lose, which I do not think is going to happen, I do not intend to. If you inherit my power, Rictus, you need to be very, very, very careful with it.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much. I was actually going to say the same to you, but not necessarily about my power, so much about my onus, my burden. Well, I'm kind of working for someone, and I don't know how they're going to take it if I am killed.
Okay. Well, that is very cryptic. Do you have, like, an aspirant that you belong to or something? Is there some sort of sub situation that I'm...
It's death.
Oh. Yes, of course. Your family's sort of charge.
No, yeah. not in that way. That yes, to that. But that's handled. Because, like, my son will inherit if I die. So
you have a son?
Yeah, 6 months old.
Holy shit.
What are
Lord
you
drop.
Doing here?
Oh, so I grew up as a necromancer, and my whole family's necromancers, and we are kind of reviled by society for that reason.
Yes.
And my hope is that with the power I would gain from being a member of the Active, I can show how helpful and beneficial necromancy can be to society so that my son doesn't have to grow up being hated.
Well,
but that's not even what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I work for death.
Okay. Well, that seems like it would give you an advantage. He gestures to the graveyard that you are now standing in front of. Surrounding it, you see faint red, like rectangular outlines surrounding a good portion of the land here. He says, okay, well, if you mean to intimidate me, consider the job well done. I assume you will have a significant advantage here, but again, Rictus, I do not intend to lose this. My life is but a dagger that has been narrowing to a point, and this is not it. So may the best man win. And he holds out his hand for a handshake.
Yeah, I shake it.
All right. Anyone else? Any business?
Where are Grikon and I now physically? Are we on like opposite sides of the bridge, or?
I mean, if you want to be there, we can hash that out.
I don't want to be there. I'm just asking where Grikon is.
Grikon has.
He's in the bathroom.
Yeah, no, Grikon would come up to you. He is. I mean, like trembling with excitement as you find him on the lawn. He is similarly the same way that Rictus kind of got decked out. He is like painted in clay and ash, just sort of a sort of intimidating battle camouflage sort of situation. And he is just all of his garments look like they were finely pressed. He is like ready to rock and roll. He comes up to you and says,
Lorevithaim, Were you able to sleep last night? Because I will...
Of course not. Can I say, you look fantastic. Your adherence to the old ways is truly inspiring.
I thought it might be a little great, much, but I...
No. It's a great tribute to me, to the conqueror. I'm very excited about it, Ogrecon.
Good.
I was going to say I'll miss you a great deal after you've passed, but I actually respect you too much to lie to you. So let me just say that I'm looking forward to this contest a great deal.
As am I. Now, I don't even need to say that. I'm not going to insult you, Lorevith, by ensuring that we obey sort of cultural rules and no dirty fighting. But I suppose they did specify no holds were barred, which would mean that dirty fighting is within the... I just want to make sure the terms of engagement are understood between the two of us.
Well, let me just say, Gracon, if you have any issue with my methods, take it up with the devil.
Awesome.
Damn, dude.
That is... I got chills, and that is saying something. All right. So
you guys roll up to a bridge, the long sort of rail-less bridge that connects the Gilded Lily, the Lily Pad Islands here floating in the lake to...
Fuck, they gotta put... Why, Griff?
What?
Damn, dude. They gotta put rails on this motherfucker,
no,
man.
No rails.
It's OSHA good for duels, but bad every other day.
Yeah. No rails.
Did they maybe take them off? Can you say that? Did they maybe, like, detach the rails? Because this is, like, this is a safety thing, man.
The rails are magic. The rails are magic holograms. And
there he goes.
And they only appear at
Hell
night.
Yeah, dude.
At nighttime, the rails appear.
Got goosebumps.
And they glow to keep people
bioluminescent.
Safe. Yeah.
Bioluminescent hand rails.
And when you touch the magic handrails, it heals you. It fixes you. It makes you feel
good.
It's daytime now, so they're not out.
The handrails have the memories of their ancestors.
You guys arrive at the bridge. He says, so what do you think? Start on either side and... have one glorious charge to the center, or where would you like to begin?
Sorry, can I say something to Travis real quick?
Sure.
Hey, Trav, in Avatar 3, Jermaine Clement is in the film, and they do find a way to make his character say the word algae, and despite the fact that he is an American, he does give it a hard G.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it is just for you and I that Jermaine Clement does say algae.
That was nice.
It really did help that 3 hours.
He looks to the camera
movie.
And says, you're welcome, Travis. And Justin.
Welcome, Travis. Hey, boys, only an hour 45 to go. Okay. Sorry.
All right.
I think, Gracon, let's do a sprint. And then we'll both try a big punch at the same time.
And then magic, right? After the big punch.
And then we'll do the regular magic stuff.
Great.
All right.
One punch, then magic. Fair?
Fair. One good punch.
Fair.
Although that may be all it takes for me to get to do to you. I'm sorry, I'm so nervous.
Helgrammet, is there anything you want to do?
Helgrammet is, as they walk... together. They're walking together, correct?
You can be, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Up this mountain, so to speak, and he's looking around nervously and says,
It's a lot higher than it looks from the ground, isn't it? I mean, just, are you surprised by how high we're climbing.
No, we're very high. You listen, this thing only lasts for like a minute, and I have to concentrate very hard to get it to work. So if I would aim. Just let me finish, please. I would aim for water.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Whew. It's really up there. should I be preparing something? We want to make this look good, right?
So you want to do like a ruse, like where, like I blasted you and you...
Well, they see everything. I mean, I just don't want to look like I'm voluntarily jumping off the edge to get away. It's got to look like we're really engaged in battle.
I mean, I can do my best. I did a little bit of community theater.
Oh, really? What shows? What did you?
Lil Abner.
Yes. Oh. Ah, yes. Oh, that's a good one. Put them back the way they was. That was a wonderful.
We did the straight play version, no music.
Oh, without the songs.
I'll do my best to make it look convincing. But Harold Grammont, if they can see everything, what makes you think they don't hear or see what we are doing right this second in this sort of conspiracy?
But I guess I just trusted my government. Maybe that was not a good idea.
It rarely is.
But why should they care? I mean, we're not breaking any rules by being... Okay, yeah, it's time to shut up now.
You make your way to the stretch of forest by the edge of the island where your holographic busts are floating. And you hear a chime, quiet and high at first, get louder and louder, counting down until that same chime rings an octave lower, reverberating, shaking the trees. And moments later, from these sort of red outlined rectangles around your battlefields, you see a 60-foot-high wall of light, red light, appear. You can still see through it, but the wind that was sort of gently blowing through the forest here, Helgrammet, has completely stopped up. It is quiet within your individual arenas, and it is only quiet for a moment before the battle begins. Let's roll initiative.
Hey everybody, in case you've somehow missed it, Story and Song, the final graphic novel in our Adventure Zone Balance graphic novel series, comes out next week. You can pre-order it right now at theadventurezonecomic.com. If you pre-order from one of our indie bookstore partners, you'll get a book plate signed by one of us and Carrie. Book release event next week in Boston. Tickets are on sale now. It's going to be July 16th at 7 p.m. at the Chevalier Theater. Each ticket includes a signed paperback copy of Story and Song provided by Brookline Booksmith. And we have a special mid-month episode of Clubhouse on Tuesday, July 14th to celebrate the book coming out. And the regular monthly Clubhouse is still on the 21st, so check that out. We've got some new merch this month. There's a Trav Nation Centennial Magnet along with a bunch of other great stuff. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will also be donated to the Asian Pacific Environmental Network. So go check that out, macroymerch.com, and back to the show.
All right, we're over 70 episodes into our show. Let's learn everything. So let's do a quick progress check. Have we learned about quantum physics?
Yes, episode 59.
We haven't learned about the history of gossip yet, have we?
Yes, we have. Same episode, actually.
Have we talked to Tom Scott about his love of roller coasters?
Episode 64.
So how close are we to learning everything?
Bad news. We still haven't learned everything yet.
Oh, we're ruined!
No. It's good news as well. There is still a lot to learn.
Woo!
I'm Dr. Ella Hubber.
I'm regular Tom Lum.
I'm Caroline Roper, and on Let's Learn Everything, we learn about science and a bit of everything else too.
And although we haven't learned everything yet, I've got a pretty good feeling about this next episode.
Join us every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
If you want to know what's going on in the world of movies, you should be listening to Maximum Film so we can tell you all about it.
Okay, but what if you already know what's going on in the world of movies? What if you're kind of obsessed with movies, like maybe you have a problem?
Well, then you should definitely be listening to Maximum Film, because we too have that problem, and it's important you know you're not alone.
We're talking indies you'll want to seek out.
Blockbusters and blockbusting wannabes.
Classics we can't get enough of.
I'm comedian and writer Kevin Avery.
I'm film critic Alonzo Duraldi.
I'm festival programmer and producer Drea Clark.
Together, we're Maximum Film. Smart about movies in Hollywood, so you don't have to be.
But if you already are, that's also great. And hey, we see you.
New episodes every week on MaximumFun.org.
Wait, can you tell me... Does the circle of battle extend over the edge?
Yes, Helgrammet. Your arena, if you'll go to the map You can see I have all of your arenas sort of marked out. The far border of the arena is hanging over the edge.
Okay.
Griffin, while the chime is counting down.
Yeah.
Rictus is going to slam Jordan's secret stuff.
Oh, shit. Okay. Please tell me what Jordan's secret stuff does.
Thank you for asking. This magical flask, rumored to once been owned by Jordan, the greatest wizard ball player who ever lived, contains a special potion that strengthens anyone who drinks it. Any creature who drinks it gains plus 1d4 to all skill checks for the next 10 minutes. The flask has enough for one drink. It refills each dawn. Each time the potion is consumed, the drinker must roll a DC 20 perception check. On a successful roll, they realize the potion is just water, but come to understand the strength was inside all along. The creature can no longer benefit from drinking the potion.
Okay.
However, if... Yeah. Then
so go ahead and... yes, you will get 1d4 bonus on your checks. Whenever you roll a d20, I'll have you roll a d4 alongside and add that result. Go ahead and do the... roll to see if you realize that the magic was inside of you all along, please. A perception check.
And I want to fail it.
You
right?
want to fail. You want to roll under a 10.
Ah. Oh.
You rolled a nat 20. The understanding that you have is so potent, Trav. Like, Rick just realizes, like, not only is the magic inside of
like the most annoying kid at the magic show.
Yeah, it's like... You realize you're the most special boy, and the power within you is like you are getting high on your own supply in a major way right now. But
so
you,
I get 1d6.
No, you get 1d4, but you super can't use this potion ever again. I suppose you can give it to someone else though.
That's like the worst nat 20.
Yeah, no, that's not a good one. That
it benefits me not at all.
No. Okay. Now, with that out of the way, if we rolled initiative.
4 for Helgrimmon.
10 for Rictus.
And a big old 3 for me.
All right. So we've got 3 arenas here. For the folks at home who cannot see our map, we've got sort of 3 arenas side by side by side. You guys are each going to be engaged in your own fight here. First in the order, we go to the graveyard. Rictus, you're standing sort of by the gate, the entryway into the graveyard, the gentleman in front of the mausoleum at the back where you nearly fell to your death during the trial of abjuration, where you met Hasty Jane. The red barrier is surrounding this entire sort of plot of land. And while you are looking at the gentleman and you all are sort of making eye contact here as the battle begins, you see appear in front of both of you, conjured into reality, you see a small like wisp, a little blue wisp floating in the air. And this blue wisp, you can see, just kind of like spins around idly for just a moment, and then a few other wisps come and combine with it. And you see floating in the air, sort of right over the center of the arena, is a spectral sphere. You can give me an arcana check if you would like to see if you know kind of like what this is.
I'd love to, Griffin. That is a 14 plus 6 for a gentleman's 20.
What you are seeing is a phenomenon that you have you are familiar with because it has kind of appeared at times in the Crossroads. This is like a clog in the flow of life and death. When spirits of the deceased are unable to pass on, they can sort of... collect and congeal, and they form a sort of mass that is just sort of death personified. What you know about these clogs is that they, once sort of conjured into existence, they will sort of grow and spread over time. So I think with that really, really nice arcana check, you know that this sphere that has just appeared in the middle of the battlefield, if you touch it, it's extremely bad for you, and it is going to get larger and larger and larger and larger. Next in the order, we go to the bridge. Lorevith, just as you and Grikhan are about to take your first steps towards each other, fists reared, You see on opposite ends of the bridge, swirling purple portals floating on top of the surface of the water below the bridge. And from those portals, you see emerge two great slimy tentacles that rear up a good 20 feet into the air. The trunks of these tentacles are about 6 feet wide or so. These are huge, sort of powerful appendages. Gracon looks to the side, looks at the tentacles, looks at you, and his face lights up, and he says, "A sea beast, Lorevith! A sea beast, Lorevith!"
"It's a bit much."
"It's the dream, Lorevith.
I don't know.
Can we just put our battle to the side for just a moment and we can face off against a sea beast, Lorevith? And then we will conclude our own sort of contest. But how many times has a Goliath had the chance to tangle with a sea beast, Lorevith?"
"I can't. How about you square off against it and I watch? And then after that, I beat the stuffing out of you."
"Oh, fine. I suppose we can continue."
No, I'm not going to.
"We can continue our duel around the sea beast. That will have to do." The enormous tentacles have appeared. That is going to be their turn. Next in the order is Dr. Legume. We're over on the forest battlefield. Dr. Legume is going to move towards you, Helgrammet. And he holds out his hands and he says,
"Okay, first I'm going to cast a super bad poison on you that's going to eat out your bones. It's going to make you all hollow and it's going to hurt so bad."
"That's good. Yes.
He is going to cast Featherfall on you.
Okay.
It slows your rate of descent to 60 feet per round, and it lasts for 1 minute. So 10 rounds of combat, basically. He casts this spell on you, and you feel yourself become sort of lighter than air.
Good, good.
Doesn't that hurt?
My bones, they feel like they're hollow, like a bird. Wink, wink, wink.
Give me a performance check, please.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, definitely with advantage because
it was so convincing. Good. Don't need advantage. It's 18.
18. All right. Okay.
Your performance is so good, it convinces people that bugs have bones.
Yeah, bugs have bird bones. And they've been, yeah, good point, Trap. Okay, yeah, you feel yourself become lighter than air, and Dr. Legume is...
Get it off!
Okay, right after he does that, you hear a very familiar sound, Helgrammet. You hear a light kind of buzzing, chirping sound that you recognize as a swarm, and... looking around, you see burrowing up from the ground, five swarms of insects are conjured onto the battlefield with you and Dr. Legume. It looks honestly a lot, Helgrammet, like how you are able to sort of summon up smaller insects to do your bidding with your kind of natural talent infestation, which you came into the contest with. These insects look a great deal like these. One of the swarms appears basically right on top of Dr. Legume and is going to begin to climb up his legs and try to sting him. They get a 17. So you see some of these bugs just basically spawn in right on top of Dr. Legume and begin to cover him. And now he starts shouting,
Ow! Is this you? I knew you were going to turn on me. This is you, isn't it?
No. Look. That's not my swarm. That's not mine.
The other swarms of insects are going to move in towards him. Next in the order is Rictus.
Rictus stands still.
Okay.
Raises the Shadow Seer's lantern.
Okay.
And just before activating it,
summons, I believe for the first time, the Shadow Blade. Cast Shadow Blade, which is a bonus action.
The Shadow Blade is the sword that you were given as a... Or wait, it's a spell, right? The conjured weapon. So remind me what's going on here.
Well, Griffin, I weave together threads of shadows to create a sword of solidified gloom in my hand.
Cool.
It lasts until the spell ends. It counts as a simple melee weapon with which I'm proficient. It deals 2d8 psychic damage on a hit.
Okay.
And when I use the sword to attack a target that is in dim light or darkness, I make the attack roll with advantage.
Okay, cool.
And if I drop it or throw it, it dissipates at the end of the turn. And as long as the spell's still going, I can use the bonus action to cause the sword to reappear in my hand.
Okay, cool. So you take up sort of a duelist's position, right? Lantern in one hand, sword of shadow in the other.
And then I activate the lantern.
Okay. You press a button that is embedded in the handle of the lantern, and it creates a solid sphere of darkness. What is the range on that?
Darkness is it's 60 feet, so I believe a 15-foot sphere around me. Yes. Causing the darkness to fill a 15-foot emanation originating from that object.
All right, yeah. You take up this duelist position and cast the spell kind of imbued within the lantern that you got during the last break and vanish into a sphere of darkness. Cool. Next in the order is Gracon. Gracon is going to charge forward. That is his move, and he readies an action. He readies a punch for you, Lorevith.
I don't agree with this way of doing initiative, Griffin. I think that Gracon and I should flip a coin.
That's weird.
What do you think about that?
Okay, next in the order is Helgrammet.
How close is Gracon to me now? How long is the bridge?
The bridge is 60 feet.
Okay, got it.
And how far is Helgrammet from Dr. Ligium?
Helgrammet is about 20 feet from Dr. Ligium.
And have we seen, is the swarm of insects attacking him?
Yes, one of the swarms of insects appeared right next to him and began attacking him.
And the others are swarming towards him?
The others began moving towards him, yes.
Okay.
And never fear, Legume. I will use the...
What kind of... Can he tell what kind of insects they are attacking Legume?
Yeah, it is sort of an assortment of insects. You see wasps, and they all seem to be of the nastier sort of variety. There are some spiders within some of the more terrestrial swarms. It is just a swarm, an assortment of bugs who sort of would not be working together like this naturally. These are sort of conjured mixes of bugs.
Okay.
I am going to save you. Hold on.
And he casts his own infestation in the direction of Legume.
Okay.
These are damselflies, and they are the natural predator for almost all of the species of insects that are attacking you in that swarm. They will attack that swarm, and maybe you a little, but mostly they're going to be attacking those insects.
Okay, so you are casting infestation. Okay, I think the easiest way to kind of like do this is the swarm of insects that are currently attacking Dr. Legume will be the ones to kind of roll the con save here to see how effective these are at holding them off. Does a 12 beat your spell check?
The spell check is, of course, 14. 14.
Okay, yes, you create another swarm of insects. You create a swarm of damselflies that fly over and begin to descend on the swarm of insects attacking Dr. Legume. As they do, you see your swarm is victorious and just kind of like picks apart this conjured swarm whose bodies sort of fall and land in this sort of babbling brook that is carrying a flow of water off the side of the island. And Dr. Legume looks at you, and I think now he sort of understands the situation. These are the kind of conjured dangers of your battlefield, and that you did not actually you did not actually sick those bugs on him. You see this swarm of insects that is closest to you, of the four kind of remaining swarms. The bugs kind of like stop and turn to look at you. Give me a nature check, please.
That would be a 26.
Jesus Christ. Okay. You can hear the kind of timbre of their chirping change. And I don't think that you are able to like speak it like a language, but you can understand how the sort of change in how they are making their insectoid noise is meant to be a sort of warning, meant to be a kind of, you know, get back sort of chirp. So it seems like they are trying to communicate that to you as you destroy some of them.
Well, there's another effect of the...
of infestation, yes. It can move... its
5 feet in a random direction if it can move and its speed is at least 5 feet.
Yes, that is true. You did take out the swarm of insects, but if you want to move there...
Well, I would say that if Legume is inside this swarm and he moved the swarm, is it okay, not I'll safe allow to say it.
Yeah. If you want to move Dr. Legume 5 feet, roll a d4 for the direction. We'll see which way he ends up going.
That is 3.
3 is east. Okay.
Okay.
So you pick him up and move him away 5 feet from where the swarm was descending, giving him a little bit more breathing room from two of these big summoned swarms. Hellgrammet, you do still have a move action.
Okay, I think he's going to continue his ruse of that he's being eaten up by acid by running towards the water.
Okay. Like straight
in
front.
How shallow is that stream?
I mean, it's pretty shallow. It is a babbling brook, so it's not like a rushing river or anything like that. It's about just 4 feet wide. You could pretty easily get over it. Okay. And
how far towards the west can he move in the stream?
I mean, I don't understand the question. Like, if you ran into the stream and then went,
move him right to. Right there, yeah. Right at the edge.
Yeah, you couldn't... I see what you're saying. So if you ran up and you hopped into this babbling brook, like, panicking, like, oh, God, I'm dying, could you then travel the... No, it wouldn't get you off the edge of the island, but it would get you fairly close. Okay. So you're continuing this ruse?
Yeah.
Okay, give me...
That just shows how brave he was for helping save Dr. Legume.
Yeah, for sure. Give me another performance check then, please.
17.
Okay.
This is his finest hour. First, he got the golden globe.
These rolls are insane, dude.
And now he's moving towards Oscar territory.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
At least it's streamy. Which is what I think streamers get.
Yeah, they get streamies. Next in the order is Lorevith. Lorevith, you are standing on the bridge in the sort of center arena here. Gakan has charged forward, fist raised. While two enormous tentacles have spawned in on either side of the bridge, what do you do?
I am going to use... Oh, man, Griffin. Remember how everybody was like, level 5, who cares?
Yeah.
Remember? And not me. But I didn't say anything. Because you know what I can do at level 5?
What?
I can get big. I'm going to activate large form once per long rest as a bonus action. You can change your size to large for 10 minutes or until you end it. For that duration, you have advantage on strength checks, and your speed increases by 10 feet.
Okay, cool.
Now, my plan for this is to activate large form. Then I will close the remaining 30-foot gap that Gracon thinks that I need to close, but I will close it faster than Gracon is anticipating.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to judge this, because I've become large. I'm going to close it faster, and then I'm going to hit him as hard as I can with my strength advantage. And it's going to be great.
And your bigness. He was
my bigness,
he had prepared...
my huge bigness. Just when you thought Lorevith Gonjabon Dreamwanderer couldn't get any bigger.
He did.
Hachi machi, there you go.
Okay, he is still going to deploy his punch, but because you have initiated this sort of like battle charge, you are going to catch him by surprise. So I will let you roll the first attack here if you are making an unarmed strike against Gracon.
With advantage, assuming.
With I'll give you advantage for this.
Because
surprise.
I did a trick on him. And it did nothing for me. I rolled 2 4s in a row. Sometimes things work out the way they're supposed to. The dice are destiny.
Sometimes the dice tell a story.
Sometimes the dice are destiny, guys. Yeah. And you shouldn't roll it twice. The dice are destiny.
You charge forward. As you charge with each footstep, your body kind of swells and grows in stature until as you bear down on Grakon, you are now like a full head taller than him. You bring a fist down and he catches it in the air and he says,
"Oh, I was so hoping that we were going to take off the limiters."
He is going to also swell up and get huge.
Two meaty men slapping me.
And as he does that, he is going to make an unarmed strike. He's going to try to headbutt you now that he is back on your level. That is an 8 plus 6, 14.
So is this his turn?
What's that? He had readied an action. This was his ready.
Oh, he had readied that. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
8 plus 6 is 14?
Yes. Yeah.
That hits.
I'm wearing a glorified diaper.
Okay. You take 5 points of bludgeoning damage as Grakon headbutts you. As he does, he pulls back, and you can just see, you know, as this big wavy green tentacle splashes around in the background, he is just grinning ear to ear. Next in the order is the gentleman. The gentleman sees you vanish in your sphere of darkness, sees this like spectral sphere appear in the air. He is going to take a few steps forward, and then he is going to attempt to hide. I need a perception check from you, Rictus, please.
Okay.
The gentleman has beaten your critical failure of a perception check here. And
I was going to talk about how I get to add 1d4 to it, but I did roll a 1.
It's a critical failure. There's really no getting around that. As this kind of like swirling cloud of darkness, you know, spins around you, you can see through it fairly well. But in the motion of the cloud of darkness, you lose track of the gentleman, and he is going to hide from you. Next in the order is back to the top. The spectral sphere is going to absorb some more wisps and increase the radius of its effect around itself.
I really regret getting big. I'm sitting here thinking about, I did it against a guy who could get big too.
Yeah.
What was the point? Now we're both just big. Sorry, I don't mean to distract from the show, but I'm just sitting here thinking, man, I wish I hadn't gotten big right then at that guy. You know?
Well, it's actually not bad that you got big, because next in the order, the enormous tentacles on each side are going to come into the middle, and where the two of you are now just kind of scrapping at the center of the bridge with your huge, powerful bodies, each tentacle is going to whip around from behind you and attempt to constrict you. So I'm going to make an attack roll against you. That is a 14 again versus AC.
Again, still does hit, yes.
Hits. And you feel it wrap around you and begin to put the a really uncomfortable tight squeeze on you. It hits you for 10 points of bludgeoning damage, and you are grappled. The enormous tentacle that is attacking Grakon is going to roll its attack.
The artist formerly known as the giant tentacle attacking Grakon.
Yes. Only gets a 9, so you see Grakon duck as he sees you get whipped with this other tentacle, and the other one just sort of sails over his head, leaving him unaffected. I'm going to put a border on you to show that you have been grabbed by the enormous tentacle here. All right. Next in the order is Dr. Legume. Dr. Legume is going to climb up a tree. He's going to climb up a tree away from the swarm of insects. He rolls a 2 on his athletics check, And so he is going to fall from the tree.
And, that is so in character.
He is going to fall, and he's going to take 4 points of bludgeoning damage as he hits the ground. And then he's going to make a wisdom saving throw for his concentration check. And he gets a 5. And Hell Grammet, as he falls and bonks himself on the ground and lands prone and loses concentration, and you teeter towards the edge of the island, you feel yourself become heavy again.
With worry? No. With mass.
With mass. With heft.
He had to have made some kind of sound when he fell.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Did he die?
No, he didn't die. Next in the order is the swarm.
Did Dad win?
Next in the order is the swarms of insects.
I wasn't paying close attention. Did Dad win?
They all, again, just sort of ignore you and begin crawling towards Dr. Legume. One has enough movement to reach him. He's prone on the ground, and they roll with advantage. 19, you see again a swarm of singing beetles and scorpions climb up on top of Dr. Legume, who has his back sort of pressed up against the tree as he's like trying to climb, like crab crawl away from them. And he is stung for 6 points of damage.
You guys!
Okay, he is looking not so great. Next in the order is Rictus.
Hey, Griffin.
Yo.
I just want to congratulate you on pitting Mr. Legume against a swarm of insects and not, like, hanging a lantern on it and throwing yourself a big fucking parade for doing a man versus bee thing. I really want to congratulate
you.
Yeah,
you know,
you snuck it in there, but
you didn't make a big deal.
Paint
out
a portrait of yourself in the foyer. You know?
I think we were all pretty unsatisfied with the conclusion of Man versus Bee.
Yeah.
And this is like where I can do my art, right? This is like where I can say what
this is
if.
When you do your work.
This what is if kind it's, of like your Griffin, fan fiction, right?
This is Griffin's OB.
Yes. This is my OB, my original B and
OTB. Yeah.
My one true B. And in this one, I say, what if Mr. Bean had to fight against mini bees? Mm-hmm. Let's find out.
And in the next episode, he'll take on a bunch of babies.
Yeah, if he, you know, if he survives this one, it's going to be baby time. All right.
Dad, I think even you would dislike Man versus Baby.
Rictus, it is your turn.
Rictus, still within the sphere of the darkness.
Yes.
Is going to cast Unseen Servant.
Man, he's like super duper duper unseen.
Yeah, man. This servant, oh boy.
Unseen as hell.
I'm going to command him to hold the lantern in the same place.
Okay, you see Beauregard, I believe?
Yep.
All right, Beauregard.
While Rictus moves towards the back of the sphere.
Okay, cool. So you are this is a ruse that you are creating. To try and trick the gentleman, as I can't do anything while that big ball of darkness is there. Okay, Beauregard takes your place, holding the lantern, and you move towards the back of the sphere. Which way are you trying to go? Around sort of the west, along this kind of like path with the...
I'm moving south, so I'm still facing forward.
Okay.
And I can still see.
Yes, you can see.
The sphere does not diminish my vision at all.
Right.
But where I was and where the shadow is centered is not where I am.
Right. Correct. What do you want to do with your turn? I guess that was your action, huh? Summoning.
That was all three of them, baby.
Okay, cool. So you are taking up kind of a... Are you trying to hide? Are you trying to make it? Like if the gentleman comes in here, like you will be able to get the drop on
him? He can't see shit.
No, he can't see anything. You also don't know where he is, though.
Yeah, but I don't have to hide.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
He comes in here, he does shit, I'm going to see it.
Yeah. Awesome.
My house.
This is a diabolical trap that you have set here, Rictus.
Thank you. Your one mistake, Griffin, was giving me a week to think about it between recordings. Sure.
Gracon is up next. Gracon is going to... he kind of looks at you struggling with your tentacle, and he kind of laughs and says,
oh, come on, there's just calamari. Lorevith, you're stronger than all that.
He is going to cast a spell. You see him hold up his hands. And as he does that, a chunk of ground from the land at the far end of the bridge rises up and smashes into the trunk of the tentacle holding you, Lorevith. That tentacle takes 6 points of bludgeoning damage. Go ahead and make a strength check to try and escape your grapple in the moment where it is weakened.
Okay. I got a 5 plus 3, and let me check again. Double check.
Yeah, you are still restrained by the tentacle as Rakan attacks it and says,
"Come on, Lorevith, shake free. It's, you didn't want to fight the sea beast, but it seems like the sea beast want to fight us."
I'm doing my best. Have a little decorum.
All right. Next in the order is Hellgrammet. Hellgrammet, you are in a babbling brook plummeting towards the edge of the island, no longer...
Wait. Why am I plummeting?
Not plummeting, but you are in the flow of water. It's not dragging you or anything. It's not deep enough to, like, pull you along, but...
Okay.
If you stay put you're and go over the edge, you are no longer light as a feather due to right. Dr.
But you are stiff as the board.
Grody. Grody to the max.
Okay. Hellgrammet is going to... So the other swarms have attacked Legume. Are they on him?
There's only one swarm that has made it to him. There's three more that are on approach.
Okay, but he is being attacked.
Yes.
Okay.
By this guy.
Right.
Can I point?
Ooh, Hellgrammet is going to cast Color Spray.
Cool.
He is going to create a 15-foot cone.
Cool.
Extending, well, let's see. He's not within 15 feet of Legume, is he?
He is not. A 15-foot cone, though, would catch the other three swarms.
Yeah.
It would not reach
okay,
one.
Okay, I'm going to move up the stream.
Okay.
I'm going to move up the stream to where...
Yeah, you can move yourself to where you want to go.
Yeah. I think I'm going to move up the stream...
Okay.
...to cast Color Spray toward... Yeah, yeah.
Right there. Okay. Yeah. Yes, with Color Spray, you can hit two of the swarms, one of which is attacking Dr. Legume. You will also hit Dr. Legume with the Color Spray. Remind me what Color Spray does, please.
Color Spray emits a dazzling array of flashing, colorful light. In this case, we're going to say mauve.
Great.
Creature in a 15-foot cone originating from you must succeed on a constitution saving throw or have the blinded condition until the end of your next turn.
Okay. I'm going to put the stat block here. Constitution saving throw?
Yep.
The insects have a +2, weirdly enough. -4 to strength. They have 3 strength, 1 intelligence, and 1 charisma, but constitution's their best stat.
Okay.
So the first swarm, the one not attacking Legume, gets a 14, which does save, hits your save. The second,
so tie goes to the runner, huh?
Tie goes to the runner on a save, yes.
Okay.
The one that is attacking him, though, only rolls an 11, so they are blinded. We're going to give them that. And Dr. Legume here is going to, we're going to roll for him. He has a +0 to his con save. He rolls a 3. So Dr. Legume looks directly into the light, and his eyes also kind of glaze over as the color swarm sort of envelops his senses.
Okay.
What did you do? I can't say anything. Is this you or is this the bugs?
No, don't worry. It's all part of my plan. Don't worry. Trust me. You've trusted me so far.
The bugs took my sight.
No. This is just a ruse. They can't attack you. I've saved you from half of the remaining swarms. Just trust me a little further.
Okay. Their stings really hurt, though.
I know.
Can you talk to them in bug language and make them stop?
Sorry, I've already used my turn.
Okay, next in the order is Lorevith. Lorevith, you are grappled, which means... Your speed is zero. You have disadvantage on attack rolls on any target other than the grappler. And it can move you when it moves.
I'm the grappler.
That is what the grapple condition does. You can still act
Hello,
as...
Hello, Batman. Come closer so I can grab you. Damn it. Don't stand all the way over there. Come on, man.
Okay.
Play along with me. I've only got the one thing. Oh, man.
Cesar Romero in his finest role.
I am going to punch my tentacle in the most vulnerable, wherever the membrane looks the thinnest.
The scrotum.
Okay.
Wherever the scrotum of the tentacle.
Is there a reason why you are punching the tentacle?
I mean, I guess I could...
I don't want you to think because you are grappled that you do not have access to all of your abilities. You can do anything you want here. You just will have disadvantage if you target anything other than the tentacle that is grappling you. That is what,
I guess,
that is what the condition
I mean,
is.
Any of my, like, elemental magics could backfire.
True.
I don't carry other weapons.
Okay.
I guess I could... I mean, I'll use... Okay, I'll do something different.
If you want to just do an unarmed strike, that is fine. I was just trying to clear up what the condition of grappled actually achieves.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of thinking of saving my spell slots for Gurkhan, but I guess it's not really necessary. I've got plenty to burn, literally. I'm gonna cast Burning Hands as a second level spell on the tentacle.
Okay, awesome. You are targeting it in a way that it is only going to, it's a cone, right? Burning Hands shoots out a cone of fire.
Yeah. It's a 15 footer.
Yeah. I don't think there's a way where you can, you could just get Gurkhan in a blast if you wanted to.
I'm not trying to.
Okay, cool.
He was decent.
Yep.
Like he attacked, he didn't have to hum it. You know,
I get you.
He chose, he made a choice.
Okay. Who's rolling, me or you?
Authentic flame, what? You gotta make a dexterity saving throw.
Oh, well, I can already tell you that's not gonna go good for this guy. A 3 plus 2, a 5. Definitely fails. So you're rolling this as a second level spell?
Yeah, that's 13 points of damage.
Okay. It is actually going to take 26 points of damage.
Heck yeah.
You see it rear back. And as it rears back, it sort of like disconnects at its midpoint and drops you kind of right down on the bridge. The tentacle that was holding you, this thing has been sort of split in half by this fire. The tentacle that is holding you just kind of loses its form and disintegrates into slime that sort of drapes over the center of the bridge here. This enormous tentacle pulls back a bit. And now Gurkhan looks at you as you rise from this kind of pool of steaming slime as you blew this tentacle in half with your magic. And he looks impressed.
Is it dead?
Not quite. But he's still impressed.
Can I give it the prone condition? Would that help?
Is that something that Burning Hands does?
Well, the hill tumble is anytime I damage hit a large or smaller creature with an attack roll and deal damage to it, you can give it the prone condition. Although, maybe this tentacle isn't large. It may be
no, big. You know what? Knowing that you need to impress your friend here, the enormous tentacle bee here on the map, he wiggle wobbles down and he looks small and cowed and prone. And
cows before my magic.
Yeah, but he's doing it like to be cool. Like he's trying. He understands that what is happening here is like
good,
a pretty
good,
important.
Good.
Kind of.
I'll spare him.
This other tentacle bows at you and then loops down into its portal and vanishes.
Look, he's dead. Don't look too close. He's dead. I killed him. He died of shame, Gurkhan. That'll be you, dying of shame.
Maximum Fun.
a worker-owned network of artist-owned shows.
Supported directly by you.